So last time I introduced linear, basic idea of linear sigma model, and spoke about some examples, namely how to engineer nonlinear sigma model on CPN, and also more general toric manifolds. Now, today I'm going to focus on another example, which is hypersurfaces. And their complete intersections. In toric manifold. I can be more general, be general like this, but it's illuminating, and also it's really simpler to just focus on one specific class of examples. So this is just degree d hypersurfaces in CP n minus 1. So such manifold is described by the set of Z1 non-zero element obeying some equation, say one equation, and this is a degree d polynomial. Example is this Fermat type, say. But of course there are more and more examples. Divided by C star, acting in the standard way. So this is a hypersurface in CP n minus 1. And I assume that this is smooth, and this is smooth. This Fermat type is smooth, and the smooth condition is written, say, as G equal to all derivative vanishing requires the I's are all zero. Z1 through Zn are all zero. Then there's no singular point in this. So I assume this condition. Okay, so we want to engineer a nonlinear sigma model whose target space is this, with some Keller class and also B field. So what is this? So linear sigma model, I'll just give you an answer and see how this arises. So P Y1 through N plus 1 chiral superfields just like in the case of the total space of O minus D over C B N minus 1 or the orbifold C to the N mod Z sub D. Just in that case, we give the certain charges minus D, 1, and 1. That means that gauge transformation is P is sent to e to the minus IDA P. Phi I, all phi I goes to I A P, phi A, phi into the I A phi I, and vector superfield, this is the gauge real superfield, the gauge field is transformed in the standard way. And the action I consider, so this is exactly the same as in the previous example, namely this O minus 1, so same. Up to here it's same as O minus D of Cp N minus 1 or C to the N mod Zd case. But the difference is in the Lagrangian. So this, the kinetic term is as before. The standard kinetic term for the chiral superfields and the gauge fields. And as before, you also I also put this twisted superpotential term, where T is a complex parameter, and I parameterize by this. R is a real number, and theta is also a real number, not to be confused with these fermionic coordinates. This is just a parameter. I hope there's no confusion about this. And the difference is I add superpotential term, which is possible in this case, which is, we haven't added this in the previous example, but we could add this. This is charge minus D because this is a degree D polynomial. So let's see how it transforms under the gauge transformation. This, as I wrote, this. And this is okay. But this is a degree D polynomial, so it's e to the I D A G phi 1 phi n. And it cancels. So it's gauge invariant. So you can safely put this superpotential. Okay, so this is the system I'm going to consider. Now you can write down the component expression and say in the Bessel-Zemino gauge, and you can read off the potential, and let me write down the potential. It is a function of P, phi 1 through phi n, and sigma, the lowest component. So I remind you that sigma is the curvature in the superspace, and it starts with sigma plus theta plus lambda minus lambda plus. Maybe I have bar in here, but let's just and then d minus. I forgot. Also, perhaps, possibly there's a sign error, but roughly it's just scalar component. So this is in Bessel-Zemino gauge. Scalar component and Dirac fermion part, and this auxiliary field, and this is the curvature of the U1 gauge field. So it has scalar, complex scalar, and it can enter into the potential. And the expression for the potential is the standard one. So this is what we got in this example, namely in the system without that superpotential term, the final term. The final term will add this to the potential. Oh, sorry, I forgot. Thank you, yes. This is very important. Yes. So the effect of having the last term is to add these parts in the potential. Okay, so let's see where is the minimum or the zero energy part, zero potential locus. So, zero of U. So it depends again on the value of R, and let's consider first positive R. In this case, by this term, we need one of phi I at least to be non-zero. So phi cannot be zero. And then vanishing of this requires sigma equal to zero. And then this is safe. And you are left with this part. And we need g of phi to be p and also this to be zero. And we know that phi is non-zero, and by the smoothness assumption, of M assumption, you cannot have G and the derivative of G to be zero at the same time unless phi is zero. So that requires P equal to zero and G of phi to be zero. And please remember that the reason why we got this non-compact fiber direction is that we had P. But now P is frozen to be zero. For P is required to be zero. So we had this non-compact space. But you are frozen in here, and furthermore, you are required to be in a hypersurface in this. So the vacuum manifold is this sigma equal to P equal to zero, and phi non-zero, and G of phi equal to zero, and C star. To be precise, let's just do it slowly. And U1, mod out by U1 with this D term equation, the vanishing of this. But as I said last time, this is the same thing as delete this bad orbit and then require this F term equation. And then C divide by the complexified gauge group C star, and this is nothing but this degree D hypersurface. So you get nonlinear sigma model on M. The normal direction. So at the energies much smaller than mass of massive fields, and the mass of massive fields are, say, gauge MOSFET and absorbed chiral MOSFET, namely the 6 MOSFET has mass of order E square root R as before, and also the transfers to this potential has mass of order has mass given determined by this. So determined by, say, I don't know, this. Okay, so this shows that this model can realize nonlinear sigma model on this target space. Okay, but the point is that this, you can move R, you can change R, and look at, say, other value of R, say R negative. Let's just look at this. Then in this case, this is positive. So in order for this to be zero, we must require P non-zero. But this term requires sigma to be zero. And also this term, the vanishing of this with P non-zero requires phi 1 through phi n all zero. So that means this vacuum manifold is this P obeying this minus dP squared equal to R equal to R modulo U1. But this, you can see that this is a one point, because this is a circle. This requires this P to be in a circle of radius square root of minus R over D. But this is just one gauge orbit. So this is one point. So the modular space, this vacuum manifold is one point. So you may say that this, you get the nonlinear sigma model whose target space is a point. But this is actually not true, because the transverse modes to this vacuum manifold, some of them is massless. And you can see that by looking at, this is just a full quartic interaction around 0 and 0. And this is a mass for sigma. And you get also some quartic interaction from the vanishing of this, except the mass for the P, mass for the transverse to this circle. Now, look at this. Degree of G can be higher than 2. And then this will give us a degree, this is like phi to the 2D, and this is phi to the d minus 1 squared, 2d minus 1. So as long as d is larger than 2, this is, there's no mass term for phi. No mass term for phi, or the whole multiplet phi I. So these remain in the system as the light degree of freedom. So this remains in the theory, in the low energy theory. So it's not a nonlinear sigma model, but a system of scalar fields. And another thing I want to say is that P non-zero, at this point P is non-zero. That means this U1 gauge symmetry is broken to some subgroup that keeps this P invariant. And this U1 action is this. So P has degree, has charge minus D. So any Dth root of unity keeps this invariant. E to the 2 pi I over D. Okay, sub D. This is the remaining gauge symmetry. And P also has a mass, but if you take the limit where this R is negative infinity, that mass, which is of order this, is strictly infinity. So you can say that there's no degree of freedom corresponding to P in that limit. Namely, this P is regarded as a frozen, fixed constant. So in this limit where R is taken to negative infinity, this P mass is goes to infinity. So P, the whole field, also the super partners, the fermionic partners of this scalar P, also have the same mass. So P is frozen at this its vacuum value P, which is actually infinity. And the remaining modes are massless modes, phi 1 through phi n, and they have a superpotential, p and g phi 1 phi n, and the gauge symmetry, there's a remaining gauge symmetry, is ZD, discrete gauge symmetry. So this is almost the same as just Landau-Ginzburg model of n variables, but with discrete gauge symmetry. And this system is called Landau-Ginzburg overfold. If you have this ZZ gauge symmetry or overfold, then there's a corresponding global symmetry. Whose corresponding group is the same as the overfold group. So-called quantum symmetry, and this is some general fact on this overfold theory. It's just to assign or to do the phase rotation for some on a circle twisted with a boundary condition twisted by this gauge symmetry. So this is called quantum symmetry. But this takes a bit longer time, so I just state this fact. Now, the only thing I haven't thought about is this, the case where R equal to zero. Then in this case, right, R equal to zero requires this equal to this. And if P is non-zero, then phi is required to be zero. But therefore, P is also required to be zero. So in this case, P is phi to is zero, and then all these vanishes, and there's no potential for sigma. No potential for sigma at this locus. So that, namely, sigma is free to move, and it's a non-compact direction, in a non-compact dimension. all directions. So such a thing is called flat direction, well, in physics terminology. There is a flat direction for sigma. And remember that in this case, our positive case, you effectively obtain this sigma model whose target space is a compact space. And also in the negative case, you have a theory with potential that grows at infinity. But in this case, you suddenly obtain this non-compact direction, and this implies a singularity. Of the theory. For example, if you consider, say, correlation function of, say, sigma and sigma bar, so it's just a path integral of a sigma at some point x and y, in the previous two cases, r positive or r negative, there's a potential at infinity, especially for sigma. Sigma even has a mass. So we expect this to be finite. But at this point, suddenly there's an infinite direction, so this may diverge. Exactly at this point. So this is the meaning of this singularity. So let me summarize what we have seen so far. So this is still just a classical analysis, but we have learned a lot already. So let me just write down this R space, and there's this zero. So at R positive, then at energies E less than E square root R, and also the second derivative of G. Maybe I should have taken square root, because it's a mass. That's a mass squared. There. Then you can interpret the theory as the nonlinear sigma model with the target space MD, degree D hypersurface. In CPN minus 1. And our negative infinity, you identify the system as the Landau-Ginzburg orbifold with super potential proportional to G, phi 1 through phi n, modulo this discrete gauge group. And there's a corresponding ZD global symmetry. And at this point, the theory is singular, because sigma is arbitrary. There's a sigma flat direction. So that's the picture you obtain just by this analysis, classical analysis. And you notice that you have a family of theories parameterized by R. R positive, you have nonlinear sigma model. But you can just take this to negative values. So from namely in some way, it's a negative Kähler parameter. And then you still have a theory. And in this limit, you get some special theory, Landau-Ginzburg orbifold, with this discrete gaze symmetry and also discrete global symmetry. But you may think this is just a fake because there is a singularity here. So this is actually separated by a singularity. So it could be you can say that it's just a gluing this piece and this piece along some singular piece. So it's not really a continuation to the negative Kähler class. So this is a bit unsatisfactory aspect, but the point is that this is just this is because a class because this is just a classical picture. In the quantum picture, this is modified. So this is a classical picture. And this is to be modified by quantum effect. And the main quantum effect here is the renormalization. And also the gauge dynamics. Or the existence of theta angle. So I have hidden one parameter. This is this theta angle. So remember that there's this t, which has this minus I theta. I only focused on this part and not paid no attention to this. And this enters into the action in this way, this theta term. And so you will add one dimension to this parameter space, but still, if you just look at this, we have a circle of singularity, and this is just this looks just a brute force gluing of two separate family of theories. But this will be modified, and also we will see that this is really a fake picture when this degree D is not the same as N, namely the target space, the hypersurface is not Calabial. Okay, are there questions so far? Okay, so let me just for non-physicists in the room, so this is important, quantum effect, especially the renormalization. So for non-physicists in the audience, let me just quickly tell you the basic some fundamental aspects of quantum field theory. So basic way of thinking in quantum field theory. So this is due to Ken Wilson in the 70s. So we physicists usually think of quantum field theory as starting with high energies. And end at low energies. So the basic question we are going to ask on a given quantum field theory is the basic problem is, so given a theory or given a Lagrangian at some high energy, where does it go to? I'm not explaining things in detail, so you may not understand what I mean by this. But let me just nevertheless say, so go to at low energies, at lower energies. So quantum field theory is something that moves as you change the energy scale, and you start with some high energies, and it moves towards something at low energies, something else at lower energies. I will explain what I mean by go to or start with and end and all these things, but let me just state. And extreme high energies and low energy limit are called ultraviolet and infrared fixed points. These are usually conformal field theories. So, as I said, this is a quantum field theory. At some high energies, finite high energy, and some finite low energies, but you could even consider continuing here, and you can even imagine where it comes from. And usually it comes from something and comes from another thing. And this is the UV fixed point. And this is one CFT, CFT1. And this is infrared fixed point. Another CFT, CFT2. What we usually mean by quantum field theory is just this, but you can even consider this. So let me explain what I mean by go to or move or start or end. So let me pick up some simple system. So consider a system of some variable, maybe scalar field, phi of x, and coupling constant, maybe it can be many of them, but let's just imagine if there's just one of them, g, and with some action, f of phi and g. And let's expand phi of x and with respect to Fourier mode. So phi of x is the, say, it's in, if it is in two dimensions, it's d2 of k and r2 into the ikx and phi hat k. And so what do I mean by start from some energy? So this is to remove the part with, say, k larger than some energy scale, or set same equivalently this is same equal to zero for k larger than this. And this is called UV cutoff. And then take some low energies. Energy. It can be close to this, or it can be very much different from this. Very much different is really different, like from the scale of atoms to the scale of universe, for example. Or even to the scale of Earth, and separate, so this must be smaller than this, and separate this phi of x, this phi of x with a cutoff, into two parts. So phi of x is expressing this Fourier expansion, but just separate this to the region with some small k and to the region with large k. Okay. And let's call this the low energy phi. And this is called high energy or high frequency phi. And the meaning of this moving to is this doing the path integral for phi of high energy phi only. So, integration, path integral of phi sub h leads to functional of phi sub l. So if you do this path integral, phi l plus phi h and g, then you get some functional, and then I call it effective phi L and G at energy mu. So this is the so-called effective action at energy mu. So this is the meaning of this flow or moving to. So at this E equal to lambda UV, you have this functional. And at lower energies, you get another functional. And so this is the meaning of the move, or this is called renormalization group flow. Let me just introduce some technical terms, which is not so relevant, but let me nevertheless say, because you may hear this in other occasions. So this S effective is very much usually very much different from this original S. And in particular, this kinetic term and the coupling constant term looks very much different. But you can actually standardize such kinetic terms and coupling terms by field redefinition or parameter redefinition. So in order to standardize the kinetic and coupling terms, we need to redefine phi sub L and G. For example, in some case, multiplicative redefinition sometimes work. But it may not be. You may need to do more elaborate redefinition. And this kinetic term and other terms and coupling terms are standardized. And this process, this redefinition, is called renormalization. Historically, this is the thing people have first noticed. And this is actually, this process, as you can guess, it's just not unique. So the choice of such redefinition scheme is called a renormalization scheme. But of course, what we are interested in, the physical quantity, shouldn't depend on such artificial redefinition. And if you remove the cutoff, suppose you take lambda UV to infinity, usually the gap in the energies is larger and larger, and then this S effective becomes singular unless you do some clever redefinition. If that is possible, if you can do this good redefinition to keep this finite in the limit of removing ultraviolet cutoff, this system is called renormalizable. If this redefined this is finite in the limit lambda UV to infinity, then the theory is called renormalizable. So this is actually historically, this is the order. First, people discovered a way to make things finite, although you may need to do this redefinition, and then remove this cutoff. But Wilson noticed that maybe this is perhaps the more natural order to think about this quantum field theory, and this is generally accepted nowadays. Okay, so this is the general story for the quantum field theory, and there's another story for supersymmetric quantum field theory. Supersymmetric quantum field theory, there are parts, some parts or sectors that are protected in some way, protected from renormalization. Or renormalization group action or flow. And let me just state this. So there are in the case of 2,2 in D equal to 1+1, there are two parts independent of each other. And so let me just remind you that general invariant Lagrangian can be written in this way. Some chiral superfield, its conjugate, twisted chiral superfield and its conjugate, and some constant parameter, and also, sorry, it can also depend on superfield that are not chiral nor twisted chiral. And also, if you have chiral superfield, you have this F term, holomorphic in phi, and it may depend on some parameter, coupling lambda. And if you have twisted chiral superfield, you have this kind of term with this twisted chiral, twisted F term, which is given by holomorphic function on some twisted chiral superfields. And it can depend again on parameter. Now, supersymmetry requires, I'm going to say some obvious thing. Supersymmetry requires that this cannot, W cannot depend on this phi bar, phi tilde bar, this anti-chiral superfield and twisted anti-chiral superfields, and superfields that's not chiral. And also this cannot depend on phi bar and phi tilde bar in S. Okay. Now let's start at some energy with some action like this, and let's do this integration over high frequency modes, high energy fields. Then you end up with some effective action, x high energies, you get this for this same set of fields. Now, by supersymmetry, you can show that this effective superpotential cannot depend on, as before this, well, this is must be for low energy fields. And also, but there's some technique to show that you can also show that this G and lambda bar and it cannot also depend on those parameters. Namely, this is a holomorphic function in phi L and lambda only. A technique to do this is to first promote these parameters to fields and then apply this rule. And another thing is that this depends holomorphically in phi tilde L and lambda tilde. So this is called decoupling theorem, and this is actually another way to say this decoupling theorem for this topological correlation functions. A twisted correlators cannot depend on chiral parameters, and B twisted model, correlation function of topological B twisted model, cannot depend on twisted chiral parameters. But maybe this is more general because this applies only to systems where you cannot do twisting. Okay. And in some case, you can even show that this has the same functional form as the original one, and such things is called non-renormalization terms. And this is very, very powerful. Okay. Okay, so this is the general explanation of about this basic way of thinking in quantum field theory and some elementary but powerful fact in this supersymmetric quantum field theory. So now we are ready to consider this quantum effect in linear sigma model. So let me just say this. So there are two elementary quantum effects. In linear sigma model. So this first thing is the renormalization. And the second is the axial anomaly. And these two are actually in some way a super partner of each other. And let me just state this. So the first is the renormalization of this parameter R. Give a name. This R parameter R is called Fayed Eliopoulos parameter. Named after the person who discovered this type of term in four-dimensional gauge theory. Okay, so let's consider let's consider U1 gauge theory, supersymmetric U1 gauge theory, with chiral superfields phi1 through phi n of charge, gauge charge q1 through qn. Then in this system R, phi Eliopoulos parameter is renormalized as follows. So this renormalized meaning the relation of R, the value of R at some high energies and the value of R at some lower energies. So R at, say, ultraviolet cutoff, high energies, and R at some lower energies, mu. So R at mu is given by R at lambda UV plus the sum of charges and then log of mu over lambda uv. So that's the renormalization of R. Okay. Let me explain why this is true. So this is to just to perform this path integral over this high frequency modes. Keeping this lower frequency modes as some background or fixed. So this is I remind you that Lagrangian include the following terms. This R D plus Q I D phi I squared plus 2 E squared D squared plus D and are independent terms. I don't pay attention to those terms. Let's focus on this term. And at high energies, of course, what I mean by this is R at, say, UV. And this parameter is also E squared at UV. By the way, this parameter enters in here, of course. But I'm focusing on this D-dependent term and R-dependent term. Now, what I'm going to do is to do this, D, V, phi, high energies, D, phi, 1, high energies, through D, phi, n, high energies, with this e to the minus s, V, phi. And then what happens to, and see what happens to this guy. V phi meaning V at high energy plus V at low. Okay. And what you do is just to separate D and phi, each term, into two pieces, and then do this integration. And this is complicated because this is cubic in field, so it's interacting. It's non-Gaussian integral. But you can actually see the effect of D-linear terms, the effect on the D-linear terms, because this D-linear terms, it is quadratic in field, and this path integral on this quadratic part is just a Gaussian integral. So this does, what it does is, let's just focus on this part. So what this does, QI D phi I part, this part goes to QI D low energies and this phi I squared replaced by the path integral, effect of path integral from energy, high energies to low energies, and then remaining low energies I phi squared, essentially. And what this is just doing this path integral or the computation of correlation functions and this. In this sense. So I'm doing this perturbation theory for this path integral. I'm employing perturbation theory to do this path integral. And this for this computation of this requires only the propagator for this phi. So this phi I squared from high energies to low energies is something like d squared k 2 pi, and some vertex like this. So you have this 2 pi over k squared for the field boson running in this loop. Now the point is that we only integrate over the region sandwiched between these two cutoffs. So it's just the integration of k squared, 1 over k squared in two-dimensional integral. So it's just, actually it's just log of lambda uv over mu. So that's the shift in here. And this shift actually shifts. That's a shift in the D linear term. So minus R lambda D, DL plus and QI DL, and then this guy, log lambda UV mu plus, and so on. You may have other terms. E squared maybe will be corrected, will be changed into some E effective squared, but I don't pay attention because I'm pure only interested in this effect in R. So this term will be called minus, so sorry, this is R was lambda UV, R mu DL. And this is how you get this. Okay, so this is simple fact, but means a lot. Okay, so we can consider various cases, and the first case is when the sum of the charges is non-zero. In this case, this R changes, R runs, as you change the energy scale. Changes as mu is changed. What changes from lambda UV to mu, because it's non-zero. So this means that R itself is not a good or genuine parameter of the theory, or does not specify the theory. Namely, so to specify the theory, one needs to say the value of R at some and at some given energy. When you say this, you need to say at the same time at which energies you take that value. Or alternatively, you can replace, one may take the energy scale, the lambda, at which this R takes a special value, namely R equal to, say, zero. So in such a case, the running by Lyapunov's parameter can be written as log nu over lambda. So you may take that scale as the parameter of the theory, as the parameter. This is comment as the parameter of the theory. And so this replaces this dimensionless parameter in the classical system by a dimensionful parameter in the quantum system. Dimension meaning mass dimension. So such a phenomenon is called dimensional transmutation. So you cannot say the theory with positive R or theory with negative R, because even if you start with positive R, it just goes to negative R. If R is negative at some energies, but at high energies, it's positive. So there's no distinction between positive or negative R in a theory whose sum over charges is non-vanishing. Sorry, when I said this seconds ago, I'm assuming the sum was positive, but of course it can go from negative to positive or positive to negative depending on the sign of this. I will say it more explicitly. But when the sum is vanishing, then it doesn't run, R does not run, and it's a good parameter, free parameter of the theory. So you can specify the theory by specifying what is the value of R in this theory. You can take R positive, then you get nonlinear sigma model, and if you get negative, then you get something close to lambda Ginzburg overfold. So let's just consider this specific case. Example is the linear sigma model for degree D hypersurface in CP n minus 1. So in this case, we had this P phi 1 phi n, and charge was minus D 1 and 1. So the sum of charges is minus D plus 1 plus 1 plus 1. There are n of them, so it's n minus D. And let me just write down the behavior of R in various cases. So it depends on whether n minus d is zero or not, and also it depends on whether it is positive, zero, or negative. So let's just plot these energies here, and let's consider three cases. D less than n, d equal to n, d larger than n. And this is the case where the hypersurface is Fano, the first positive first term class, Fano. And this is the case where you have Calabi-Yau, first term class is zero. And this is a case called general type. First term class is negative. Just like sphere, torus, and hyogenous Fermat surface. And right, it is not just like when n is 3. It is exactly such. Yes. Right. I think so. Okay. So, for this case, the parameter of the theory is a scalar parameter, say lambda, and above that scale, r is positive, and below that scale, r is negative, because the sum is positive. And if you look at this, for example, this is positive, this is actually n minus d, positive, so it grows at large mu. It's larger at larger mu and smaller at smaller mu. And here the interpretation is nonlinear sigma model on this degree d hypersurface. And here, and especially toward this extreme low energy limit, you get Lambda-Ginzburg overfold with superpotential g of phi modulo z d. And here, r of mu, r does not run. So you can take r freely, and for positive, large positive r, it's nonlinear sigma model. And r goes to negative, this is lambda against the overhold. And for this case, again, the parameter of the theory is replaced by a scale parameter. And above the scale parameter, it's the opposite case. R is negative above this at high energies, and R is positive at low energies. And the interpretation here is the Lambda-Ginzburg overfold. And the interpretation here is the nonlinear sigma model on this general type degree d hypersurface. Okay. And okay, so this is the main thing. And you can also say the same thing for the case without this superpotential p times g. Let me just say this for completeness. So the system with W equal to zero, this system was W equal to P times G, but without superpotential, what you have is, depending on the relation of D and N, so it's again here and here. Here you get nonlinear sigma model on this total space of O minus D over Cp n minus 1. And here it flows to overfold. Not Lambda-Ginzburg, but just overfold. C to the n over Z to the D. That's D. Here it's R doesn't run. So there's a parameter space where you have O minus n over Cp n minus 1. This is a non-compact Calabi-Yau. And here you have C to the n mod Z to the D sub n. Again, it's overfold of Calabi-Yau type. And here, above you get at high energies, overfold C to the n mod Z D. And here, nonlinear sigma model on this total space. Mm. Maybe I should say something to be more precise. This Landa Ginzburg Oldfold itself is actually a conformal field theory, and it cannot run. So what you are having here, you see that these things are running, things are changing. So this must be, the interpretation of this must be, the limit may be this Landa Ginzburg Oldfold, but the theory we are considering is plus the Landa Ginzburg Oldfold with some perturbation. And here also. And these are the perturbations that moves the theory away from this, so these are called relevant perturbations. And from the point of view of string theory, these such perturbations are called closed string tachyons, and anything that corresponds to relevant operators are called tachyons, and this is very important in understanding string theory in general. And this is a good toy model because you have some control by supersymmetry. Okay, so anyway, so let me just continue by stating another quantum effect, which is this anomaly, and then take a break. The second quantum effect is U1 axial anomaly. This is, in a sense, a super partner of this renormalization. And I remind you that this Lagrangian was, of this classical system was, say, the general U1 with charge QI chiral superfields. With some superpotential, some gauge invariant superpotential. In that case, it's P times G, but I just denoted by some general holomorphic and gauge invariant function. And we notice that this is invariant under axial U1 R symmetry, namely this V2, this vector field, or any superfield to the phase rotation of the fermionic coordinate, where plus and minus in an opposite way. And same for chiral superfield. Yes. So in order for this to be invariant, we want this to be invariant, and it is so because I don't touch anything. We want this to have charge 2 under this R symmetry, and we want this term to be charge 0. So the only thing you want to check is the charge 2 of sigma, and this is actually easy to see. So sigma is defined by this. And D bar plus is essentially the derivative with respect to theta bar plus, and it has the right, I think, the right charge to make it charge 2. So e to the I 2 I beta sigma, and then okay. But anyway, what this does is to just to do the phase rotation of fermions. And phase rotation of sigma by with charge 2. So when you do this fermion, phase rotation of fermion, especially the axial rotation for charged fermions, there's a danger of anomaly, the mismatch in the number of zeromoles, as we have experienced some time ago. So, for example, for gauge configuration, with, say, the first term class k, this is an integer, then the path integral measure for fermions, fermion path integral measure, changes by the mismatch in the number of zeromodes. And the mismatch is proportional to this charge. From each field, you get charge times this standard mismatch. So this is the anomaly. So this is U1 axial. Classical symmetry is anomalous if the sum of charges is non-zero. Okay. And you notice that this thing has the same effect as the shift in the theta angle. Because the theta term, the Lagrangian contains this theta term, Fv term. So the shift in this path integral measure is reproduced or just implies the shift in the theta angle, or can be absorbed by the opposite shift. So this means something important. When there is an anomaly, namely the sum of charges is non-zero, then theta angle can be shifted or even completely absorbed by a field redefinition. Or the phase rotation of fermion and also this sigma field. So that means that theta is not a genuine parameter of the theory. Just like R wasn't the genuine prompt of the theory. And when there's no anomaly, this cannot be done. So in this case, the sum of charges is vanishing, then when axial is anomaly free, first of all. And also theta is a free parameter, good free parameter of the theory. Physics can depend on this value of the theta, and it does, as we will see, or as we have seen in this nonlinear sigma model, where this topological correlation function depends on theta by Wolff-Schmidt instanton effect. Okay, so this is the second important quantum effect, the axial anomaly. Okay, so we have seen these two important elementary quantum effects, but this is not yet done. This picture is still to be modified by further, more important quantum effect. And this must be, perhaps, maybe let's take a break until 3 o'clock or so. I hope the tea is ready. I asked. Oh, no, they are making, but let's take a break until 3. Not yet, no. Yeah, I learned. Yeah. Okay, so, right, I have to finish earlier than usual today, like 4, 5 to 4 or so. So I'm going to discuss about this further quantum correction to get the right picture. So what we have done is, what we have considered is a linear sigma model. So starting with some Lagrangian linear sigma model, Lagrangian. And it could be coming from weakly coupled gauge theory. Suppose you consider this toric Fano, like CPN, or degree D less than N Fano case, hypersurface. Then, so this is just a gauge theory, but at some lower energies, it can be identified with nonlinear sigma model. Nonlinear sigma model can come from elsewhere, but it merges. So here maybe you can say, consider free or infinite size nonlinear sigma model. And it merges. And then size becomes lower and lower, large size here. But size becomes smaller and smaller at lower and lower energies. Smaller size or R in this linear sigma model, smaller R. And at some point hit R equal to zero. And then goes to negative R. But I remind you that there is some singularity here. So singularity here. So what's going on? And another kind of linear sigma model is the one for general type. Same thing. You start with some gauge theory, and still a gauge theory, it flows, the linear sigma model. And here R is very negative, large in the negative direction, and it merges to theory coming from Landau-Ginzburg-Oberfeld. And this is the Landau-Ginzburg-Oberfeld with perturbation and merges to this. And again, it hits through R equal to zero because R is negative here and grows and then hits zero. So So in order to understand the really low energy behavior beyond this scale lambda, we need to probe this region where R equal to zero. And similarly for Calabi-Yau case, or D equal to N hypersurface, or more general Calabi-Yau, you have this R, and there's zero, and this is nonlinear sigma model. And this is lambda against the overfold. And you may be also be interested in here, what's going on around this point. So for these purposes, we need to analyze the behavior of the system near R equal to zero. So near R equal to zero, we knew that classical potential for sigma is nearly flat. Okay, so this motivates us to study, probe the region with a large sigma, because this is where the singularity comes from, and this is something that could destroy this whole picture. We want to make sure whether that's happening or not. Okay, so let's look at probe the region with large sigma, meaning that fix some value for sigma at very large region, and then look at the theory there. So for large sigma, the charged fields are heavy by this term in the Lagrangian, Qi squared sigma squared phi I squared. When the charge is non-vanishing, large sigma gives phi I a large mass. So it's heavy, so it's appropriate to integrate out phi I. So actually, when I discussed this renormalization, moving theory from high energies to low energies, I simply integrated out this high Fourier modes, but in the theory with massive field, actually what you need to do is to integrate out modes where not just this, but also mass squared added to be large things. We want to integrate out this. And if there's a heavy field in a finite energy theory, it's appropriate to just integrate out all modes, because even if K is zero, this is still large. Okay, so what you get from this is the effective action for the gauge field only. Phi I, phi, and also dV high frequency modes, and this. Maybe you want to say it less, lower frequency. Okay. And let's just abbreviate this. Let's decide not to write it. And by supersymmetry, the effective action must be, this is a gauge invariant functional of V only, and it must be that there's nothing to no charged field, so it must be a sigma only, and it must be written in this way. Some Kähler potential, effective Kähler potential for sigma. This is depending on E and T bar. And possibly if there's a superpotential, the parameter that enters into the superpotential enters here. And also the twisted F term, some effective superpotential for sigma and T only. And I'm already here using this decoupling theorem. E cannot enter into here, T bar cannot enter into here, and also the parameter that enters into the superpotential, so let's call it G to be AI1 AI IN. ID, degree D. So AI, the coefficient of the superpotential does enter into here, but cannot enter into here. So in particular, you could even set A equal to zero if you are just interested in this piece. So let me just say this. By decoupling theorem, is not affected, is independent of the detail of the G, this polynomial. And in fact, one can to compute W effective, one can set G to equal to zero. Okay. Then this, then phi integral is Gaussian, because if you don't have a superpotential, the phi enters into the action just as this, nowhere else. And this is quadratic in phi. So it's just a Gaussian integral. And exactly, can be done exactly done. So, and now, and then still you need to integrate out of the high frequency mode. But that would actually change. The possible change will all the time involve this gauge coupling constant, which cannot enter into this effective superpotential. So that also cannot affect it. So what you need to do is just to integrate out this phi field and then obtain an effective action and read this, and that's the answer. And I don't go into the detail here, and I'm just write down the result. The result is, this is change mu, this changes, but this change, that change is absorbed by the change coming from this. So let me show you an example. The CPN nonlinear inverse nonlinear sigma model. The linear sigma model for that. This is the case where n fields with charge all equal to 1, and therefore the sum of charges is n, and W is of course 0. there's no, you cannot write down a Gaussian polynomial. And just plug this result into here, you get just n terms with all 1, so it's like minus n sigma log sigma over mu minus 1 minus t mu sigma. Okay, so that's the effective superpotential. Now let's take the derivative. So let's look for the critical points of this superpotential. So this is to just look for the locus where this is satisfied, and using this I can compute this, and we want this to be zero. So in other words, it's just n equal to e to the minus t over mu. Or if you use this scale parameter that parameterizes the system, it's just this is mu to the n e to the minus t, and this is nothing but lambda to the n. So the solution, there are n solutions. Lambda times e to the 2 pi I L over n, where L is from 0, 1 to n minus 1. So if you write down the sigma plane, actually there are vacua at non-zero value of sigma. Lambda and lambda e to the 2 pi I over n, etc. There are n vacua at sigma n lambda. Okay? And so this corresponds to the fact that you know that this dimension of this CPN minus 1, the cohomology of this CPN minus 1 is n. We know that the number of vacua is n in this nonlinear sigma model. And in this realization, these are here. These are these n vacua. And also you can read more information than this. Each choice will choose a vacuum. And I remind you that this U1 axial rotates this, sorry, with charge 2. But of course, only the Z sub DZN is anomaly free. I forgot to state that, but yes, this e to the min 2ik sum over qi beta was the anomaly, and this is 1 when this beta is 2nth root of unity, because this is n, and there is 2n. So that will shift like 2 times 2 pi I beta over 2n, not beta, k or n over n sigma, and this just the generator of this will just do this rotation. The generator of this will do this, and right. Yes, I think so. Not generator, sorry. No, that this generator does this. Right, so because this is cancelling, so it's, yes, that's right. But the Z2 subgroup, which is this plus or minus 1, because this is 2 times minus 1 squared, so it just makes it invariant. So we know that Z sub 2n R axial R symmetry, anomaly free part, R symmetry, is spontaneously broken to Z sub 2. Only this is invariant by this choice of vacuum. So you can also learn such things. Okay, so this is one example and one application to the dynamics of this low energy dynamics of nonlinear sigma model whose target space is CPn minus 1. Yeah, there is actually sigma, if you remember that in the nonlinear sigma model limit, say this limit, this. And this corresponds to an operator in the nonlinear sigma model corresponds to the Kähler class. This is two forms. This is like dvi and this is like dvi bar. So this is the Kähler class. So the order parameter would be the correlation function of operator involving this thing. And in particular, in the CP1 case, I know that on this is non-zero. And that's the order parameter. Okay, anyway, yes, that's one. Okay, anyway, this is one application. And the next thing is the case most interesting for string theory. This is the example for degree d equal to n hypersurface in CP n minus 1. So that's the case for Calabi-Yau manifold. So in that case, I remind you that this was this QI was minus D, 1, 1, and N of them. So just plug it, and also D was N. Plug this expression into here. Then you get this expression, this answer. This is minus, okay, let's write down N sigma log sigma over mu minus 1 from the N phi I, and from the P you get this minus D over mu minus 1, sorry, D sigma, and then minus T over mu sigma. And in this case, this actually T doesn't depend on mu, and also log cancels out. You have minus n times sigma log sigma, and you get plus, in this case d is n, plus n times log, this is sigma here, sigma log sigma. The log sigma part cancels, but there are some remaining corrections. which is this t, not just t, but t log minus t sigma. Okay. So that's the expression for the effective superpotential. This is simply linear in sigma. And there's no critical point, and that doesn't mean that there's no critical point in the theory. There's no vacuum in the theory. We are simply looking at the region where sigma is large. And this simply means that U effective energy at large sigma, so let's consider this as family of theories parameterized by sigma, large sigma, is just E effective squared. It can depend on sigma. And then T minus D log minus D squared at large sigma. And this is actually a very non-trivial fact. I'm here and also here, I'm saying as if sigma is just a chiral superfield, but this is, I remind you that this is a gauge field. The highest component has gauge field, and usually it's not as usually you don't expect as things as simple as this, but actually this, in this case, there's some subtle U1 gauge dynamics in 1 plus 1 dimensions, which I need to omit because of the time, that assures, that guarantees us to just behave sigma as if this is just an ordinary chiral superfield. So this is the right answer. And at sigma going to larger and larger and in infinity limit, this mass for the phi is heavier and heavier, and this approaches to the classical value. So what you find is the potential like this. The potential, this can be regarded as a potential, effective potential for sigma. If quantum effective potential for sigma. So let's draw this sigma space, and this is the energy. Now, as long as this thing is non-zero, this T is away from this T log minus T, it approaches to some height, E squared over 2 T minus T log minus T. So it's like this in here and also in the same height here for any phase of sigma it must approach there, approach this. And also we know from this fact that this nonlinear sigma model whose target space is this Calabi-Yau is has supersymmetric vacuum, that means that there must be a vacuum, zero energy configuration, and it must be at zero because this is where the nonlinear sigma model, this phi, can be non-zero. So what this shows that is that this potential must behave something, I don't know the detail here, but something like this, approaches constant. So this is the U effective of sigma. And if you do the quantum mechanics of this kind of potential, you know that there are discrete spectrum somewhere below this. And then above this line, you have this continuous spectrum. So here you have continuous spectrum. And here there is some discrete spectrum. So the presence of this discrete spectrum is the fact that this theory is effectively compact at low energies. So at low energies, at very low energies, one can only see the discrete spectrum. So this is effectively compact. The energy is flat, but the flat is above zero. So because of that, at near sigma equal to zero, there's a wave function, discretely separated spectrum of wave functions. But exactly at t is d log minus d, the gap vanishes. And that means that continuous spectrum starting at E equal to zero. So this descends to the ground, and then it's just continuous everywhere. So this is the signature of singularity. So let me summarize what we have learned. So let me draw the moduli space of theories, namely it's parameterized by t is e to the minus I theta, or let's just draw this e to the t. So it's like this. And here you have infinity, and that corresponds to r positive infinity, that corresponds to large volume limit. And in the neighborhood of this, you can regard this as nonlinear sigma model on this Calabi-Yau hypersurface of degree n in CP n minus 1. And here it is zero, and this is where r is negative infinity, and this is interpreted as the Landau-Ginzburg orbifold with super potential given by g, phi, module this discrete group. Because of this general fact from this orbifold, that means that there is this global symmetry with group Vn. And you have some point in the middle, it's minus d to the d, one point. This is where the theory is singular. And this is exactly the picture implied by mirror symmetry. We know what it is. We have at least one realization of the whole thing. It's just a gauge theory. Or Yes, it's just a gauge theory. And you can see that this Landau-Ginzburg theory is connected continuously to the large volume region. So this is also significantly different from this classical picture we have just seen in the earlier part of today's lecture. E to the T. Yeah. Yeah, renormalization, what changes is this, I erase perhaps, this Kähler potential term, but not the super potential term, and this parameter itself can be regarded as just a parameter that can be used exactly. Non-linear sigma model. No, there's no parameter like this in the Landau-Ginzburg model. You can actually deform it, and this will enter into the deformation. And but non-linear sigma model depends on the scalar parameter. And the relation of this exact scalar parameter and that parameter is actually non-trivial. And that's the so-called mirror map. And that cannot, this is not seen just by this analysis, and you need to perform more detailed analysis of finding this so-called flat coordinate. But at least this is more significant than just those details, because we have a picture of everything. Okay, and so this is one, the most important application for this linear sigma model. Yes. Yes, this is only for d equal to n. And next, I'm going to talk about d not equal to n. This is the low energy. So this is the theory, the parameter space for this theory. Right, and of course, as I said, the quantum field theory is defined by something like a path. So this is a parameter space for this path. And also you can say that this is a parameter space of what it ends at. And this is the CFT, infrared fixed point. And this is the parameter space. This can be regarded as the parameter space for this infrared fixed point. Oh, it's not here. It's not here. It's like we are drawing. This is a drawing of this, and this is the energies. You don't have energies. This is a parameter for the theory, not parameter for the energies. Okay, so next thing I'm going to talk about is the case where D is not equal to N, hypersurface degree. Next example, degree D not equal to N, hypersurface in dP N minus 1. And just do the computation with D not equal to N, and then let's look for this equation. First derivative of effective superpotential is given by this. to find from this is this equal to minus d to the d equals minus this. Maybe you can move mu into the right hand side. But anyway, what we find here is that there are n minus d absolute value solutions. So here I'm assuming, not assuming, d is larger than or smaller than n. So n minus d can be positive or negative. But the number of solutions are always the absolute value of n minus d. And so you may guess that there are n minus d vacua in this system, but actually that's not true. So there are n minus d vacua, massive vacua actually. Massive vacua. Massive meaning there's no massless field around this, as you can analyze by taking the second derivative of the superpotential. But these are not all the vacua. There are other things, because we have only looked at large sigma region. The whole analysis is valid at large, only at large sigma. And here you find this vacua at non-zero sigma or large sigma. But we have omitted analysis near sigma equal to zero. Near sigma equal to zero, the classical analysis can be used to see what kind of theories you obtain at or near this sigma equal to zero. And let me just remind you what it is. So this is this, and that depends on whether d is less than n or larger than n. And above lambda, you get nonlinear sigma model on this degree d hypersurface. And here, what this implies is that n minus d, this is positive in this case, massive vacua. And not just that, with another vacua at sigma equal to zero, where you use the classical analysis, then it's just lambda of Ginzburg overfold with superpotential g of phi mod z d. That's the low energy theories. And this case, that's the opposite case. This is lambda Ginzburg overfold, w equal to g of phi mod z d plus perturbation, relevant perturbation. And here you have d minus n, this is positive in this case, massive vacua, plus nonlinear sigma model on this general type hypersurface. So that's the guess. That's simply a guess. And let's check whether this is plausible. Yes. Right. So QFT is given by a choosing a vacuum. For each choice, you have this flow. For another choice, you have flowing to another place. Yeah, UV theory is the same. You can also, it applies even to the simple scalar theory with potential like this. There are two vacuums, unlike in quantum mechanics. You have to choose a vacuum, then it flows to this, or the vacuum. If you choose the vacuum here, then it flows to the theory of small.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, no. Not, these may be related by axial. The other things, yes, it's separated. So it's like this. Let me draw this, it's important. So there are N minus D vacuum, and there's one vacuum here with this. One vacuum, not one theory, one infrared theory, like this. It has many SUSY vacua. Okay. So the check maybe what you can do is to just compare Witten index. Must be the same. Same meaning between UV and IR. Another thing is the central charge, so-called central charge. I will explain a little bit what it is of UV and infrared IR fixed points related by central charge UV must be larger than central charge IR. The central charge is the measure of the number of degree of freedom. And because we are integrating out some modes, it's obvious that the central charge must decrease. If the central charge is the right measure of the number of degrees of freedom. Okay, let's just quote the result, Witten index. We know a part of it, it's just a cohomology class. So trace Euler number, trace of nonlinear sigma model, the Witten index for nonlinear sigma model is the Euler number of this MD. And this is just a mathematical exercise to show that this is just given by this. And for Landau-Ginzburg model, Landau-Ginzburg orbifold, well, it doesn't matter if it is orbifold or not, but you can also, there's a way to compute. This is just a CFT technique. Oh, not CFT. This is a simple technique. And this is this. Yeah, you can work out. There's a way to compute. What? And the central charge, actually the central charge is so-called C hat, which is C divided by, I guess, 6 or 3. C is 9 for Calabria threefold, so it should be this. Okay, C hat for nonlinear sigma model is simply the dimension of the target space, which is in this case n minus 2. Because the hypersurface in CP n minus 1. So this is n minus 2. And C hat of the Landau-Ginzburg orbifold, Oh, sorry. This written index depends on whether you do this overfold or not. Sorry. This is, yes, this is for this overfold. Sihat doesn't depend on whether you do this overfold or not. And, you know, there's also a way to compute, and this is chess. Okay. So let's just compare. Let's just check whether this is this holds or not. So again, the less than n, the final case, and the larger than n, and UV and IR. So UV is nonlinear sigma model. I write Witten index here and C hat here, Witten index here and C hat here. Here it's just a nonlinear sigma model, so it's just that. D 1 minus D n minus 1 plus n. And in the infrared limit, you get the proposal is that you have n minus d massive vacua, and this one begins under Ginsburg overfold. Oh, sorry, another thing is that c hat of the massive vacuum is zero because there's no massless, no degree of freedom below the mass. So it's zero. Anyway, so this is the Witten index is from n, is sum of n minus d from each of this massive vacua plus the Witten index for the Landau-Ginzburg overfold, which is this, and this is exactly equal. And for this, UV central charge is dimension n minus 2, the infrared central charge is n minus 2 n over d. And now d is less than n, so this is larger than 1. So this is n. This is larger than 2, so this is smaller than this. And here it's the opposite. The Landau-Ginzburg overfold has this central charge, and the infrared central Witten index. The Witten index is this, and this is equal. And this is, again, opposite. And this is this. So this is consistent. All right. So this is good. And this is nothing more than just a consistency check, but it looks like it's true. And actually, you can use mirror symmetry also to verify this. And you have a simple one-lie expression for this family of, for this theories, for various degree in relation to, in various relation to n. Okay, so maybe I should stop because the next talk is next. Lecture is starting in 5 minutes. Okay.